We're your health and safety angels, Daisy Silcock
and Lindsay Mason. Health and safety.
Busting the barriers. Hello and welcome to the Health and Safety Angels with me, Daisy Silcock, and with
me, Lindsay Mason.
Oh my God, you always do that.
I like the breath you took for me.
I never think you're actually going to say your name. It's like it's tentative.
Because I never know I'm supposed to.
Well, the thing is, we shouldn't really even start with that because our little blurby bit at the beginning says, busting the barriers with me, Daisy Silcock. And so we probably don't even need to say that. So, hi, everyone.
Welcome back to episode three of part three of Riddle Regulations.
We will hopefully get it done in three episodes. But if it doesn't happen, do you know what? It doesn't happen.
This scares me for how many episodes other regulations are going to be.
Yeah. But I also think that we've just got more into our stride, haven't we? And we're doing more research. We're kind of making a lot more effort to kind of, you know, plan and prepare for the episodes and things. So I think that's potentially why we might even have to go back and revisit some of the ones that we did to begin with, you know, in the future, that is.
Well, I was thinking about listening to the early episodes again, just to see how we've changed, because there must be some kind of progression, even if it's the speaking over each other.
I know, we still do that though, don't we? Occasionally.
But it's the delay doesn't help. The internet's not, I mean, just amazing how we can do some awesome things in this world, but we can't get internet to not buffer or delay.
I know, it's a weird one, isn't it? I don't know if I need a new laptop as well. I don't know if that makes a massive difference, your processing speeds, but I did have some extra RAM or whatever added to my laptop a while ago. But I don't know. I'm not techie enough. Although you are very good at editing. So any mistakes that we do make, Lindsay's editing studio can help.
It's my sideline.
It is, along with plastering and all the other things that you do.
I'm a multitasker, aren't I? I have got a few skills.
I know. Whereas I am limited to just talking. That's maybe, my only skill.
Well, maybe I'm just winging each one I've got.
Possibly. Right. I have got... Oh, first of all, just wanted to say thank you to everyone who joined us on our Instagram Live. Obviously, by the time this episode comes out, we would have done our Instagram Live. And so thank you for everybody who joined us and commented and asked questions. And there was that one comment that you really liked, wasn't it, Linz? What was that about? Was it a lady said something about listening to us and...
She likes listening to us in the car and it's like having a conversation with us.
That was nice.
And that's what we like, right?
Yeah.
We're just building little friendships. It's nice. We're all humans on this planet.
So to that lovely listener, thank you. That comment has stuck with us and has meant a lot. So very appreciative. And of everybody who joined us, we didn't actually post the live afterwards onto Instagram because... the sound quality was really poor. So hopefully by the next time we do a live, we'll be able to sort of sort out what we did wrong and then we would be able to post it in future.
I think maybe the next person I date needs to be an IT specialist. That would work.
There you go. You see, now you put it out there now. You might suddenly get inboxes of various IT people offering. In fairness, I did have somebody did say to me, I've had a couple of people who have said, you know, they're happy to help. But I mean, I know with your editing.
Do you say, no, it's fine. We'll struggle along. Don't worry about it.
No. I just said, well, Lindsay
does figure it out.
Lindsay does the IT. So I don't really care about that stuff. Sorry.
I think I'd rather the social media. Please swap.
I know. God, yeah. I've definitely got the easy end of the bargain. Right. So I wanted to tell you about, this past week I was teaching, and one of the things I often do on courses is when we're talking about the force of the law, so the outcomes of failing to comply, often I have a look at, with the delegates, some cases that have gone through court or where there's been enforcement action and things like that. And we picked the area of Peterborough to look at. As one of the delegates, I think either lived or worked in Peterborough. And a case came up, which I had not heard of. I might have heard of it in passing, but it then took me down this rabbit hole, which, by the way, listeners, it doesn't relate to Ridor, but it is a very, very interesting case. And as always, I'm just springing this upon Lindsay. So she's kind of live reacting to what I'm about to tell her. Are you ready?
I'm used to it. You do it all the time to me now.
No, I know. It's just like, what's she got to tell me this time? But I just love the fact that I can actually then come and talk to you about this, because this has, the minute I read this, no joke, it made me cry. It was really bothered me. So I'm going to try and piece this together, and the information's all out there on the internet, so I'm not going to hide any names or company names or anything like this. And obviously, you know, as we've said in the past, the things that we say in this podcast are, you know, purely our, you know, suppositions, opinions, whatever you want to call them. So I don't want to get myself into any sort of legal hot bother. So let me explain what happened. In Peterborough, there is a company that makes fireworks. And on the 2nd of October 2018, there was an explosion. And this explosion killed a 24-year-old worker, a guy called Brendan Legister. So Brendan was just 24. He was a father as well. He had an 8-month-old baby at the time. So, obviously, that's horrendous. There was a statement given by his dad, and it said, unsurprisingly, that it was the worst day of his life, and this was his only son and his best friend.
Aww.
I know. And obviously, as a parent, you can't help but just for a split second kind of step into the shoes of this parent, this dad. And he went on to say that, and this is a quote, "The suffering is still embedded in my mind and will never leave me until the day I die." And that's just absolutely heartbreaking. And he also talks about the fact that his daughter, who was 8 months old, will obviously never know what kind of dad she had. And this is just the horrendous side of it. So there was a fire, and he was involved in this fire, Brendan, and he was very seriously burnt, and he died the following day after the fire because of the extensive burns that he suffered. So the company was found guilty under Section 2.1 of the Health and Safety at Work Act. If you're not sure what that is, go back in time to our previous episodes and you'll see what the requirement is under Section 2.1. And they were found guilty, and they were fined £500,000 and ordered to pay nearly £21,000 in costs. And that's when it all goes a bit weird, because, and I want to make sure, I might get this slightly wrong, but the company to begin with was called Lemaitre Limited. And then the company name changed to LM, I presume for Lemaitre, 140121 Limited, which ironically was the date that it started, the 14th of the 1st, 2021. Now, that company then went into liquidation, and another company has subsequently been created, which was called MCW Consultancy. They took over Lemaitre, and then another company has been set up. So we've gone through four companies since this accident, since this fatality. Because at the time, the company that was given the fine had gone into liquidation, the fine has not been paid.
That is a massive issue with our limited company system. That's disgusting.
Now, bear in mind that this company is still in existence. So the new Lemaitre is still in existence. They're still licensed with an explosives license. if you sort of look for their name, it actually, one of the things it actually says, I found on their website, one of their sort of frequently asked, they have like a whole safety section on their website. And it actually says, and I quote, all Lemaitre pyrotechnic products are approved by the HSE, which is really interesting because that's a weird statement to make anyway, because I don't know what HSE approval is. I've never heard of HSE approval. I mean, there are licenses that the HSE can issue for certain things, and they would need to have an explosives license, but HSE approval, I've never heard of such a thing. So that seems to be something that maybe they just kind of tagline themselves with. But I can't believe that they're saying that, bearing in mind that they still owe £500,000 and £21,000 to the HSE. The other thing to note about this company is that Brendan wasn't the first that had died at this company. They've actually had three deaths. So they had one in 1988, one in 1990, and then obviously Brendan's in 2018 as well. So again, you know, this combination of setting up companies, closing companies, liquidating companies, and then starting back up again, claiming to be HSE approved, having this reputation of three deaths already. But also looking at the company's website, one of the interesting thing it talks about is, and if you have a look on their pictures on the internet of the accident, it's, to me, it looks kind of like a wooden shed, lean-to type building. You know, pictures from the fire itself. It looks made out of sort of corrugated sheeting and wood. It doesn't look the most sort of technically advanced looking place to actually be making fireworks out of. But when you then have a look at their website, it's a very flash website. And it's quite happy to say that we've been going since 1977. You know, we're the founding father of pyrotechnics. And it says, all product research and design and development takes place at our UK site in Peterborough. So they're not disowning the fact that they are the same company. They're quite clearly lining themselves up. So how on earth have they been able to get away with not paying this £500,000? Is this purely because they've changed their name?
Well, it's a legal loophole for businesses to get away with it. They can change their name multiple times. And this exactly goes back to why we have additional reasons for managing health and safety, because you can't flip and rely on people's moral compass. It's disgusting behaviour. How can you live with yourself?
No, exactly. And to then be sort of shouting from the rooftops about how professional they are and all the rest of it, you know, research sites and all this sort of stuff, trying to paint a picture of themselves as an organisation that is highly professional. It was shocking to me that there will be no justice for that young guy, you know, and that's what we should expect of the law.
Do you think we've gone down in moral standards, or do you think that the internet allows us to recognise how poor some standards are within some people?
No, I don't necessarily think so. I think that in terms of the moral standards part, I think in a way, a lot of people have probably taken sat up, and listened more, because the internet is there and you can see everything. I mean, bear in mind that the case, we're talking only March last year, that did this case to go to court. So it's a new one. I mean, we're talking like literally 12 months. But because of that name change, they'll never end up having to pay that fine. Now, that doesn't mean that their history of what they've done isn't there, because obviously it's all over the internet. But if you were looking at this company, you probably just look at customer feedback and say, oh, yeah, that looks great. You wouldn't necessarily dive into this company and go, well, what's your safety record? And by the sounds of it, potentially, they wouldn't even tell you.
If you're buying fireworks, it's not the same as buying building services, where you're going to check out the contractor and make sure they're compliant. And so they're in an industry where people aren't really that bothered, so they can get away with it.
Yeah, it's funny though, isn't it? Because actually, when you look at pyrotechnics, because this company makes, the sort of hefty pyrotechnics that you'd see in things like nightclubs, events, rock concerts, that sort of thing. I mean, they might make sort of smaller stuff as well, I'm not sure, but there's obviously been lots of incidents involving pyrotechnics in fires and things in the past. So there is a general kind of safety issue surrounding that type of product anyway. And you combine that with a company that's not manufacturing things morally, isn't taking responsibility for its actions, and then to quite happily just sort of brag about its safety rapport and reputation, when actually the internet and the information and all these reporters that have sort of dived into this can find, well, actually, no, you've killed three people so far and you're not atoning for it.
The worst part for me is that the death was preventable. And I'm sure there's people listening that have lost parents, potentially even lost children. It's heartbreaking. But when it's something that isn't something that the universe has created for you, it's worse. It could still be here if that company had done or reached the minimum standard at least.
Absolutely. And I did, when I sort of looked at this case to begin with, I did think about whether, had perhaps be there been a corporate manslaughter case against the organization, then potentially there would have been a director disqualification order as well. But actually, when you look at Companies House, they've had that many directors coming in and out of the organization. I don't imagine that would have held them back anyway.
So bad. Well, it just shows what you're fighting against, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And that this is why we're trying to do this. We're trying to do this for Brendan and his family and that little, child of his who will now be, 6 or 7 years old, and has to eventually hear this story and find out that the company who should have kept her dad safe didn't. And not only didn't they, but they're then through this loophole, as Linda said, they've got away with it.
Shocking. And I must say, every single time, I'm never surprised because I know that people are bad. It's just so gut-wrenchingly horrible. So
It
sad.
is. It's a horrendous, absolutely horrendous one. And it was one I just wanted to bring to everybody's attention, really. Just to when, some people probably think that safety is all about, trying to catch people out. Well, yes, it is in some ways. But ultimately, there's no justice for that person, really, unless the fine has been paid and the family of a feel that that justice has been done. And I would imagine that there's no way that they would feel that, especially seeing that constant reminder of the organization kind of, flaunting itself with that website and all the rest of it. It's very frustrating, very frustrating. It was one I really wanted to bring up. And I know it's not related to Riddle, but I think these are the sorts of things that I think are important that we do talk about and we bring to people's attention, because they're potentially cases that nobody would hear about and they wouldn't get that time of day. And I guess out of respect for the people that die, it's important that we do remember.
But it's also important that people that aren't in the industry actually hear what goes on. Because sometimes when you've got checks to do and reports to feed back and you've got to comply with this reg and you've got to comply with that reg, it can seem maybe a bit too much or a bit over the top, and you can lose a bit of engagement with it. But actually listening to what's gone on and starting to apply what we're talking about to a situation and saying, well, actually, by complying, we could be preventing that. It actually builds engagement. So I think it's actually one of the most important things we do.
Absolutely. No, I agree. And obviously our hearts go out to Brendan's family. It's just a horrific one, and you never know, maybe the HSE will come at them if they could, but sadly on this occasion I think they've managed to worm their way out of it.
So we're moving on to our Riddle regulations. We've got another two regulations to cover. So we're starting with Regulation 8, which is occupational diseases. So diseases that come from your work task. So it says, where in relation to a person at work, the responsible person receives a diagnosis of, and we've discussed the responsible person, they find out we've got a carpal tunnel syndrome, where the person's work involves regular use of percussive or vibrating tools. B, cramp in the hand or forearm, where the person's work involves prolonged periods of repetitive movements of the fingers, hand or arm. So they've got a diagnosis of cramp in the hand or forearm.
Yeah, but that's like repetitive strain injury, isn't it? That's what it's really getting at.
Funny wording.
The interesting thing about the carpal tunnel one, of course, is that it talks about vibration and percussive movements and stuff. But of course, it's not just those kind of things that could lead to carpal tunnel, because it would also be things like your typing, and that's, you know, using computers. But effectively, that wouldn't be covered under that requirement. You wouldn't have to, under that requirement, actually report it. It's only if it's percussive or vibrating equipment.
That's actually a really important thing for people to know.
Yeah, because it's another little gap, isn't it, really?
Yeah. I'd be interesting to see if the guidance actually specifies that, as you've just put it.
Yeah, I don't know, actually. I'm not sure.
We'll have to have a look. So then we said B, cramp in the arm or forearm, like repetitive strain injury. But that's where the person's work involves prolonged periods of repetitive movement of the fingers, hand or arm. Then we've got C, occupational dermatitis, where the person's work involves significant or regular exposure to a known skin sensitizer or irritant. So I guess they'd have to prove in court that the work was significant or regular.
Yes, of course. I guess there's also a level with this that it's everybody's individual susceptibility to things as well that could make them, could give them that sensitivity.
But I wonder if my skin was sensitive and a product we used in the workplace gave me dermatitis, but actually I didn't have regular exposure or significant exposure, whether that would fall into this bracket. Because it's very specific, isn't it?
In what way?
Well, it says the person's work has to involve significant or regular exposure. So if it's only occasional, but you still get dermatitis from it.
Yeah, I guess that would be a point. I mean, an example of that would be things like hairdressers, you know, where they are working with those sorts of chemicals and shampoos and stuff. But even something as simple as hand sanitizer. You know, remember when we were all hand sanitizing continuously, then that would be a potential sensitizer as well, because it's got alcohol in it. So it's got that drying ability in it, hasn't it?
And that definitely is significant or regular with the amount of times that had to go on.
Well, yeah, exactly.
D, hand arm vibration syndrome, where the person's work involves regular use of percussive or vibrating tools or the holding of materials which are subject to percussive processes or processes causing vibration. So that's either using a physical hand tool, lawnmower, for example, or you're processing a product that is getting the vibration through some machinery.
Yes. So it's kind of coming through and then causing that damage, that effect, or like you're holding maybe a piece of, a piece of wood that's going through a vibrating piece of equipment. And then that obviously would then potentially cause that to you.
Or a handle, if you're operating a machine and you're moving a handle.
Yeah, absolutely.
E, occupational asthma, where the person's work involves significant or regular exposure to a known respiratory sensitizer. Or the last one, tendonitis, oh gosh, or
tenosynovitis.
It's like mesothelioma. I'm always proud that I can say that and everyone else struggles.
I love tenosynovitis as a word to say. It just rolls off the tongue.
For you? Okay, let me try. Tenosynovitis. Tendonitis or tenosynovitis in the hand or forearm, where the person's work is physically demanding and involves frequent repetitive movements. But it's obvious, as I can't say it, I don't know what that is. So what is it?
Okay, so tendonitis is inflammation of the tendon, and tenosynovitis is inflammation of the sheath that goes round the tendon. And this would be, again, usually physically demanding, repetitive movement that potentially could cause this. So, you know, things like lifting or bricklaying, that sort of thing that could potentially cause those types of activities, or anywhere where you might be keeping like your wrist, for example, in an extreme posture, you know, like, I don't know, sort of maybe you're holding a piece of equipment, or maybe you're holding a panel to the ceiling as somebody else is kind of hammering it into place. Those sorts of things could cause it.
I wonder, seeing as I'm a plasterer now, you have your hawk and trowel. Your hawk is the thing that you hold with the flat section.
Yeah.
If you're holding that all the time.
Yeah, I guess you could, yeah. And the important thing to note with the occupational diseases is that they have to be diagnosed by a recognised doctor or medical professional. You couldn't just randomly come into work and say, oh, by the way, I've got tendonitis. And then suddenly it becomes reportable. There would have to be an official diagnosis of that. Obviously, then connecting the dots between the work activities that you do. Or if it's, say, it's something like the occupational asthma, you would hope, and I say that loosely, especially given the story, the severity of the story we've just been telling you before, but something like occupational asthma, you'd hope that if you were exposed to something that could cause asthma, like a dust or a fume or something like that, that there was already some level of control measure in place and hopefully health surveillance in place. And it may be that the health surveillance picks up the occupational asthma that's developed, and then that would then make it recognised, and then you'd, you know, have to report.
And we say
it.
Hopefully, but we know, don't we, that based on the fact that people are using welfare facilities that are revolting, that people aren't using the correct extraction, they aren't protecting their staff enough. So, the other thing is that occupational is in there a lot, and that's because it has to come from your work-related task.
So there would have to be that like clear line that shows you do that, that's led to that.
So that's the end of occupational diseases. There's quite a few things in there. That is written in the legislation itself on legislation.gov.uk, but also you'll find that information in the guidance document. And the last regulation that we're looking at is exposure to carcinogens, mutagens, and biological agents, which is Regulation 9. So where, in relation to a person at work, the responsible person receives a diagnosis of A, any cancer attributed to an occupational exposure to a known human carcinogen or mutagen, including ionizing radiation. So carcinogen is cancer-causing. Do you know what mutagen means?
Yeah, so it's a cell mutator. So, for example, if you think about UVA and UVB radiation from the sun, you've got one that's ionizing, one that's not non-ionizing. So one that heats up the cells, one that alters the cells. So a cancer causer is one that obviously is going to create some sort of, you know, for example, lung cancer from inhaling asbestos fibers. A mutagen is one that is going to mutate, alter the cells within your body. So say you're exposed to a chemical, and that chemical, if it is a mutagen, for example, should have the clear symbol on it, which is kind of like the outline of a person with like, yes, a sort of star shape, health hazard symbol. And what that means, it's going to mutate the cells within your body or lead to things like germ cell mutation. So almost effectively being able to alter the kind of very DNA of you, which could result in maybe nothing to you, but it could result in birth defects of children going forward. It can also cause things like impotency. There's health effects that could affect your life quite significantly, or the life of your unborns as well. So you imagine if we've got somebody that's, you know, of an age where they're maybe having a baby, are pregnant, thinking about having children at some point in the future, being exposed without any control measures to a mutagen is highly dangerous. And for those of you who know your sort of safety stories quite well, in terms of past disasters, the Bhopal disaster that happened in India in the 1980s is a prime example of the release of a mutagen. It had the ability to kill instantly, but then also mutate cells so that even to this day, children are still being born with birth defects and learning difficulties and so on because of those mutagenic properties.
Blimey. This might not be related, but having done the IEMA, knowing you've done it recently, we may have had the same story. In Canada, a company were dumping waste in the waters, and the village fished in those waters, and the child, a child had been found to have some form of defect, and they traced it back through the breast milk, then to the food that the mother had eaten, which had come from this lake that had come from the dumping of this waste in the water.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the story of the Erin Brockovich movie, of course, is based on a true story where exactly the same thing happened that led to cancer in people of all sorts of different ages through that contaminated. And there's lots of different examples of that, actually, where that's happened, you know, the contamination has happened. So sadly, yes, that is a big one that can cause both cancer and mutations. And then it also mentions about radiation, doesn't it?
Ionizing radiation, yeah.
Yeah. So exposure to sunlight would be an example. If you end up with skin cancer and the most likely point, you know, the bit where you weren't controlled was the work activities you do, and effectively that would become a RIDDOR reportable incident of cancer.
And then B, the last section they've got in Regulation 9, any disease attributed to an occupational exposure to a biological agent.
Yeah, so did we talk about biological stuff?
We did.
Yeah, we did, didn't we? Yeah. And it was all about sort of endoparasites and...
Yes.
Microorganisms and that sort of thing. I think a good example of this one would be Legionella. So where someone's been exposed to the Legionella bacteria, that is a biological agent, and therefore would be reportable. But of course it might be, it doesn't necessarily have to be. It could be that it's like a needle stick injury. So where there's a contaminated syringe has got into the skin of a person accidentally, maybe they work in healthcare, maybe they work in a hospital, maybe they work in a laboratory. That would be an example of a biological agent as well.
Do you know a big industry that we have an issue with needle stick injuries is maintenance, going into empty properties or even tenanted properties where people have left drug paraphernalia around.
Yeah. No, that's a... I mean, in fairness, me and my son, we were walking on a beach a couple of weeks ago on Anglesey, and we came across two needles. The caps were on the needles, and sadly, I didn't have anything to, you know, safely kind of collect them. But I did call up the council, and they actually have like a whole kind of phone line that they use for that to collect, you know, where the, yeah. And I used the What Three Words app. We talked about that before, haven't we? The What Three Words app.
I know what it is, but I don't know if we've talked about it.
So the What Three Words app, if people don't know about it, is where they've effectively, this app has created this huge grid network over the whole planet, and it gives three words for each, I think it's 3 meter by 3 meter or 1 meter by 1 meter cube of the planet. So for example, where you are right now, if you turned on the What Three Words app, it would locate you, and your location might be, you know, banana, umbrella, river, something like that. And so what we use when we were on the beach was the What Three Words app to locate the locations of these needles, so that hopefully they could pinpoint it quite. Otherwise, if you just went, oh, it's on this beach. I mean, the beach is quite a big place, isn't it? So it just helps to narrow it down a little bit. I've done that before when we've been things like litter picking. and we found needles. It's horrible. It's horrible. You know, you're there with your child trying to do something good for the planet, and then there's this like whacking great needle there. Very unpleasant.
You are an incredibly fabulous human.
Well, that's very kind. What's made you say that?
You know that. No, you know that, right?
What, because I litter pick?
Because that's it. Most people don't go to their effort days to recognise that there are needles on a beach that could harm other people after you've left, to go out of your way to contact the council, report the actual location using an app that really pins it down to a specific location. I bet there are people listening right now that say, yeah, I've never gone to that level. You'd like to think you would and you would try to do it, but you've done that quite a bit. You're pretty cool.
Well, I just think that litter is something that really bothers me. I hate it when I see people in cars ahead of me throwing out rubbish. I don't like it for the planet. I don't like it for animals. I don't like the look of it, you know. I used to actually have, when we used to do litter picking really regularly, especially around the sort of COVID-y times, I actually got loads of kit, and I even got a Sharps bin so that I could actually keep the needles safely and then dispose of them safely as well. Because the idea of children, and it's always in places like parks or in, you know, the beach. I mean, the beach is probably one of the worst places for that sort of thing to be, because children,
right, no shoes, no, yeah, clothes.
Children are digging. I mean, I can't even tell you the other things, some of the other disgusting things I found, like feminine hygiene products on the beach. It's just horrible. Now, I guess some of it could have been washed up, but that's even worse as well. The idea that it's come in, well, either way, it's horrendous, but I just think it's just part of our duty, really, isn't it? Especially if it's because I think, because I'm there with my son, this is the next generation, and you want to encourage them to love the planet as well, and, you know, to care for other people, even if it's not your rubbish. So I think it's important. And if you just think, if everybody just did a little tiny bit, the difference it would make, you know.
Of course. And we spend a lot of time educating kids on it, but there seems to be an age at which those kids seem to forget, because at the skate park near my house, there's always tons of rubbish. And I try. I'll take a carrier bag with me and grab what I can. But the bins are never big enough. And if kids, let's say 10 years, we've been really teaching kids about recycling, upcycling, take your litter home. Where's it going wrong then? Because the teenagers...
I think it gets to that point where it's just not cool.
Do you think?
Yeah, I think, and then eventually you do like a 360, I think, or a lot of people do a 360 and go, actually, I might then be a parent going forward. So then I need to be nice to the planet. I'm not saying everybody is going to suddenly be a litter bug when they get to teenage years. You look at that sort of Greta Thunberg or whatever her name is. But I just think that I think it's one of those things where actually it's kind of, I don't know, is it cool to drop litter? I don't know, maybe it is, like cool smoking or whatever, you know, as far as a teenager is concerned.
Well, maybe a mind can only cope with so many things, and young kids are very passionate about things like that. And then as you get to your teens, other things become a priority for a while. So maybe you can only focus on so many things. But it is sad. It really does make me feel sad when I see those big gas canisters at the side of the road and people throwing full bags of takeout rubbish, and it's so easy to get out the car at home and put it in your bin.
Well, we had an incident here. This was kind of it would have been during one of the kind of COVID lockdown type periods, because it was the one where you were allowed to go walking and things like that, so everyone was making the use of that. And I remember we went for a walk and we came across black bags outside a school, and straight away, because one of the bags had been ripped, I thought, that's asbestos containing materials.
No.
Oh god, yeah, outside a school, and these black guys, straight away I just was like, don't go near them, girl. Obviously someone must have opened the bags to like see what was inside, maybe thinking, oh, it may have been something somebody's dumped that's worth taking.
Yeah.
And so straight away around the council, there was like an out of hours service that they offered, and somebody came and looked at it. And then, of course, the sad thing was, is that they went, yeah, I think she's right. And then they had to send somebody else to come, and then they had to decontaminate that area.
Wow.
And this, again, is a real problem for the environment, is that people are fly tipping things like asbestos materials, and then you've got contaminated soil. And then we've got to get that surveyed, and then we've got to get that cleaned and removed before you could do anything with that land. Otherwise, that land has like zero value and is dangerous, and it's dangerous to animals and all sorts of stuff until it's cleaned.
And the cost implications from your local government.
Well, they come on us. Yeah.
Yeah. And
it all falls back on the taxpayer in some way.
Yeah. So that's a business somewhere not stepping up to their duty, and it affecting society. So everyone should.
Absolutely. I agree. And the frustrating thing with this was that on the local council website, it gives loads of information about asbestos removal. So like double bagging it, taking it to the council, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
This is why I want people, Joe Public, to know about health and safety, so that people are a bit more educated about what the responsibilities of businesses are, because then people may call it out a bit more.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would say that that's either somebody who's removed something that they believe to be asbestos from their own home, maybe, or whether it was a builder that had done it and had just, you know, literally done sort of drive by fly tip. Either way, it's not safe. It's outside a school. Come on. You know, it's just, I mean, I know the chance of it actually resulting in anything dangerous is very low, but nevertheless, I mean, you've got to be a fairly sort of immoral human to go, oh, well, I'll dump this outside this school.
It's hard to know whether that they are just so blatantly awful and they've done that, or whether they just don't know. I mean, they know it's asbestos, that's why it's dumped there.
Yes.
But I wouldn't give them enough credit to dump it outside of school on purpose.
Maybe. I don't know. But yeah, so I think that if you know, that sort of thing can help your local community. But obviously, if you're doing things like litter picking, make sure you have the right kit. We have like grabbers and gloves and all sorts of stuff, because you just don't know what you are going to find. And even though I would always think it's a great thing to do, it's, you know, always better to be safe than sorry, isn't it? You never know. I mean, it's like when you pick up cans of drink or bottles, you never quite know what you might find inside. If everybody's, you know, somebody may have done a little wee in it, for example. You don't want to be pouring that out all over yourself.
Right. Ugh. And you could be making things worse for yourself if you're not fully prepared to do it. The other thing is, you've got to know where what you collect is going to go. So you've got to have a place that it yes. can be disposed of. So it's a big duty to do, but very respectable.
Do you know, it comes back to, I think we've spoken about this before. We certainly have privately discussed this. The one of the reasons why I like doing these sorts of things with my son, and in fact, one of the things that we did fairly recently, we went to a beach, because obviously I live by the sea, so there's beach everywhere. And we picked as much plastic or rubbish as we could find. And then he actually built like a rubbish art picture with it. So he put it all together on a piece of paper and made like a Welsh dragon out of all these bits of like fishing net. There was loads of fishing net and fishing line. And he made this little art picture. So it was kind of like, and then of course, once we'd done that, we obviously then recycled all the bits that we could and things. But it made it kind of fun as well. Anyway, silly. But the point I was going to make is that I think, whether it's stuff to do with the environment or health and safety and things like first aid and fire safety, I think that because children of that primary school age are on the whole such a captive audience and like little sponges, I think it is a good way to target them at that point and give them some of these life lessons really early on. Because obviously, as we've already said, maybe come teenager or preteen, some of that passion for saving the planet, etc., may have diminished. So I think that children of that age why not? Why not do? I mean, my son's recently done his first aid badge at Cubs.
Oh,
wow. That's amazing, you know? And in fact, this is something we are going to address in an upcoming episode, isn't it, Lynn?
Yes, we've got first aid regulations coming up next.
Indeed. And we're also going to be speaking to a charity that actually works with young children and tries to educate them on all things to do with health and safety. So we're covering all the bases.
There's lots of fabulous episodes to listen to. So if you're having a great time already, just be prepared. It's going to get better.
Excellent. Right. Well, I think we should wind this one up for this time. We'll see you all very soon.
Hope you enjoyed the end of the Riddle regulations, and we will see you back next episode with a brand new regulation.